Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio. I'm Darren Hefty.
And I'm Brian Hefty. Thanks for joining us today. Today on the show, we're going to talk just a little bit about spray tank cleanout. We're going to get to your calls and questions in the Ag PhD mailbag. And I guess I just wanted to start the show today talking about one thing that I've been hearing a lot in our industry right now. And I'm sure this probably isn't familiar to you, but worry. Are you worried about your crop that's already in the ground? Are you worried that you're going to get stuff planted timely? Are you worried that you're going to get the weeds under control or insects or diseases? Are you worried about the grain markets? Look, the reason why I wanted to bring this up today is because, especially at this time of the year, when everybody's busy, and in a lot of cases, lacking a little bit of sleep, it's very easy for these worries to become dominant in your mind. And I just want to say this. First of all, if you're reading the Bible, it'll tell you, don't worry about anything. Now, I realize as a farmer, that's probably hard to do. But I just want to tell you, most of the things that you worry about, they never come true anyway. And what good does worrying do you, especially once crop's in the ground? I talked to a few guys today. Oh, I'm worried about my crop that's already in the ground. I'm going, why? What? There's absolutely zero you can do about that today. How about we just wait and see how it pans out? Let's spend our energy focused on other things that can make your farm money. So I know that there are a lot of unfortunate things that can happen to us as farmers. I don't need to go through the list. We all know about it, and that's part of what brings worry on. But fortunately, there are things like crop insurance, and even just on our own farm, one of the big things that our dad talked about all the time, our grandpa owned part of a couple banks years and years ago too, and so he'd also talk to us about risk management, but it was just about spreading your risk all the time. And this is a big thing that we try to discuss on the show here. It's planting lots of different varieties, planting a wide range of maturities, planting on different dates, doing everything you can to spread your risk. On our own farm, we farm about 3,500 crop acres. Okay, it's not all contiguous. If it was, we'd have more risk there, which would mean I'd probably insure it a little bit differently. So anyway, you have to think about those things, obviously, and manage your risk. But I just want to encourage you today. We are in a great industry. And one of the things, too, that I would like you to do at some point in the future is travel sometime to a third world country and just spend a few days there and see what you think. When you get home, I'll almost guarantee you many of your old concerns are going to go away. And you're going to really appreciate what you have, even if it's not your best year or anything else. You're going to go, wow, it could be a lot worse. I've been to a lot of third world countries. Darren has as well. And all I can tell you is every day I'm so thankful to get to live and work and farm here in North America. It's unbelievable the opportunities that we have. So anyway, again, I just want to encourage you today. Let's set worries aside. Let's focus on what we can do to help our operations and get better and hopefully make some money here this year. But you know what? Even if we don't, we still have to be thankful that we have all the opportunities that we do. And hopefully things will turn out great for you in the long run. And here's the other great thing. If you have specific questions, you can ask us anytime. You can call us at 844-44-AG-PHD. You can email us, radio@agphd.com. You can send us a note on X at AgPHD Media, Brian Hefty or Darren Hefty. We are here to answer your questions and help you through all these agronomic issues. So let's get to that right now in the AgPHD mailbag.
It's the mailbag!
All right, Brian, this question comes in from Antonio, who is down in the northeast coast of Brazil. And he said, back in 2013, I spent a couple years up in Bloomington, Normal, Illinois, and found Ag PhD. Been following you guys ever since. Now I'm back in Brazil working with sugarcane production, and I've been introducing the Albrecht methodology on soil fertility. And this program's been working good. We've been getting our base saturations in the 65% calcium, 15% magnesium, 5% potassium range. but our soils are pretty much pure sand. Our CECs are between 2.5 and 5, and it's not a big challenge to get things in equilibrium, but right. the soil can't hold much,
right.
so we have to do continuous fertilization.
Yep.
We've got drip irrigation now with more than 50,000 acres. That's awesome. And he said it's making the job of fertigation easier.
Yes.
So he said, my question is, how do you manage nitrogen and potassium on these sandy soils? In my situation, do you think it'd be better to put it all on at planting time?
No.
What about the holding capacity for the CEC, especially with the nitrogen? How could I use it to measure nitrogen holding capacity?
Yeah, so our general rule of thumb is take 10 times your CEC. That'll give you a rough idea of how much nitrogen your soil can hold at any one time. So 2.5 to 5, that would mean 25 to 50 pounds of nitrogen. That's about all your soil can hold. Now, can you push it a little bit if, let's say, the corn is growing and sucking lots of nitrogen out every day? Well, of course you can. If you are at planting time, though, and it's going to be a while before the crop needs any nitrogen, then you don't want to push it in that situation. So you just have to use your head. Now, with potassium, we'll often talk about how in heavy soils, that's pretty non-leachable. In your sand, and with all the rainfall you get and drip irrigation, all that potassium is going to move too. Now, it's not going to move near at the pace that nitrogen does. Is it possible that you could get by putting on all your potassium for the season ahead of time? It's possible, but I think you're going to want to try adding a little bit of potassium as the season progresses. That will most likely pay off for you as well. Yes, your soil can't hold the nitrate, the sulfate, the boron, and probably even the potassium for any given season in one shot. So you just have to spoon feed. Now, you mentioned drip irrigation. That's awesome. So at least you could throw small amounts of nutrients out every time you're putting water to that field. That's what I'd be doing. And in addition to that, you can obviously supplement with fertilizer over the top as well.
Thanks for the question. Thanks for following us. We really appreciate that, Antonio. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Maverick Corn Herbicide from Valent USA has proven to be a key part of growers' success in fighting problematic weeds. But don't take it from us. Take it from farmer Rob Schaefer.
Residuals have become a big part of our chemical programs with trying to battle water hemp, and also mare's tail is our big one. It's done a real good job of controlling those. You don't have to, you know, put a bunch of gallons in your sprayer, cover a lot of acres that way.
Visit Valent.com/Maverick to learn more about Maverick Corn Herbicide. Always read and follow label instructions.
Weeds rob you of yield potential, so rob them of the chance to grow with powerful corn herbicide solutions from Corteva Agriscience. Weeds won't know what hit them, but you will, because you can count on proven top herbicides like Resicor or SureStart 2 or the new game-changing herbicide Cairo to effectively control weeds. That way, you spend less time worrying about unwanted yield-robbing weeds and have more time to power on with your day. Learn more at PowerOverWeeds.com.
The hard-working, independent spirit of rural America can often be isolating. It's not often discussed, but mental health issues are real. Now's the time to lead by example, talk openly, and show that a strong mind is just as important as a strong body. FMC is proud to be working toward ending the misconceptions around mental health through awareness, guidance, and action. Together, we can uproot the stigma.
It's smart to make the right agronomic choices, and it's even smarter to get rewarded for them. With the Bayer Plus Rewards program, you earn cash back on seed, herbicides, and other eligible products. And it keeps getting smarter, because now you can earn an additional 10% bonus when you send your redemption check to your retailer. To learn more, contact your retailer today. Protect your yields and get the most from your land with Bayer Plus Rewards. Visit MyBayerPlus.com and see program terms and conditions for full details.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio as spray season begins or is in full swing in some parts of the country. We're talking about spray tank cleanout today. I actually was just chatting with some folks about seed treater clean out this morning. That everything that we're doing on the farm, hey, we got to make sure we're cleaning the equipment out at the end. Whether you're putting on fertilizer, putting on herbicides, putting on a seed treatment, whatever that may be, we got to keep stuff clean so we don't have contamination, so we don't have poor performance, plugging, just all these different issues. We'll start off today. We've got Trevor Dale with us with Valent. I know Trevor has worked on this a lot, both in the seed treating aspect and of course, in the foliar spray crop protection business. How you doing, Trevor?
Yeah, doing real good, Darren. How are you?
Good. Plus, I should mention you also farm. So not only do you get to do this and help lots of companies with this, you also get to do it on your own farm and keep things clean. So you bring all that knowledge back and being a guy who has been out in a lot of the problem areas, problem fields. When a farmer has an issue, you're one of the guys that shows up and helps them. Now you bring all that back home. So you got to be thinking in your mind, man, I don't want to make this mistake. I've seen that before. And it's got to almost make it even a little tougher.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy when haven't been doing it as long as you guys. But when you think back over the previous 20 years almost and all the different experiences over time, and it's crazy in the seed treaters and the sprayers. And even sometimes get, I've seen floaters plugged up with, wet fertilizer from different herbicides. So, and I've seen a lot of things that can't say I've seen at all, but because there's always some surprises. But, we actually just had some training, which I think relates very much to this. And one of our technical guys was talking about, SC formulations and the fact that, we're so used to having EC formulations in the past that were really pretty easy to work with. You take Roundup or something like that, Select Max, it's really no issue to mix and load and whatever else, but all these SCs have to be shaken up or mixed up and stuff like that. So
talk to us about
kind
that,
of a
Trevor.
Reminder to me.
The EC and SC, what do those abbreviations stand for?
Well, EC is an emulsifiable concentrate. So there's various different emulsifiers that are keeping the active ingredient in suspension or solution. And an SC is a soluble concentrate, and so that's essentially where us and pretty much every other chemical company is putting the active ingredient on clay particles and suspending it in water. And so they're great formulations, but you mix them differently, right? SC has got to be in first or towards the front of the mixing order. Compared to an EC, where it can be later, and depending on how many things and what you're mixing together. But just before you go and crack the jug, you got to shake it around some with an SC. An EC is not so much. You can just take it and pour it in.
Interesting.
So it's and I was, the guy showed, it's not just Valent. It's pretty much every company for whatever reasons. With these SC formulations, we need to remember that, we gotta give these a shake here first before we go ahead and dump them in the tank. And, another thing that was mentioned was, with these newer sprayers, you can get agitation, a crazy amount of agitation. And, essentially that's, passing the product at a very high rate of flow and speed through the filters on the sprayers, and sometimes that, is just going so fast that the product can't get through the screen. So, yes, there's some things that I hadn't really thought about for a number of years.
Yeah, I think it's good to have a little refresher on some of those things. The other thing I was going to bring up, and we don't have a lot of time here, but I just wanted to remind everyone, get stuff cleaned out right away. And we were talking about seed treaters this morning here, and that's one thing that we've seen. The guys that just spray some water after they run a batch of seed through the treater comes clean almost instantly, and they're done. But if you don't do that and you say, yeah, I'll get back to it, then the stuff dries on there and sticks. I mean, it has stickers in it to stick onto seed. You're going to have problems. And then you think about what we're putting in our spray tank. A lot of times we're putting spreader stickers in with many of these foliar products. Well, what do we think is going to happen if we don't clean them out right away? We're going to have some sticky junk in the tank, and that's going to create some issues. Hey, Trevor, we got to run, but thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on. Good luck on your farm as well. Got Wesley Everman with us right now with North Carolina State. All right, Wesley, I say we got to clean stuff out fast here in the Dakotas where we're in the 50s and 60s right now. I can only imagine in North Carolina where the sun shines some days out there. It can get pretty warm and stuff can really stick on those tanks.
That's absolutely right. We're touching 80 today. So you're talking about the right temperature and factors at the right time. You know, we have a lot of concern of stuff sticking in hoses and sticking around for that next spray. And we encourage a lot of the same, get that water in there quick. And if you can, if you're really worried about it, triple rinse, because the sooner you do it, the better off you are.
Well, you think about it. We've got in a lot of the new sprayers now an extra little tank of water for tank cleanout. And the whole idea of tank cleanout was you were going to do it in the same field that you just got done spraying. And if we do that, we're doing it immediately before we move on to something else. Now, I get it if you're just heading to the next field to do the exact same product mix, then yeah, you want to wait till you're done with that. But still, I mean, we've got the tools to do it if we just take the time to make sure we get it cleaned out.
That's right. And a lot of times it's one of those things I realize, you know, you're already thinking about the next thing, right? And oftentimes these simple little things slip our mind, but it's important, you know, the little details are what separate, you know, just getting by or mistakes from being successful day in, day out.
Now, Trevor was talking about some of the different formulations of chemistries that are out there today. One thing that's really surprised me is just a little bit of contaminant left in the tank sometimes can make the next batch you try and mix up a mess. Why does it only take just a little bit of this stuff to mess everything up?
Yeah, so it goes back to the old adage, the dose makes the poison, right? So oftentimes we can get away with some products just kind of hanging around. But dicamba has been all in the news, right? So it's a great example. We do a lot of training with that down here. And a very small dose will give you symptomology on soybeans, right? So it just takes a whiff and a tiny bit sticking around in a hose, somewhere where, you know, your end caps, if you didn't, you know, completely flush the boom, you know, maybe even a tender line, right? It just takes a little bit to actually show up. Other products, you know, maybe glyphosate, some of the ALSs, you can have actually a fair bit in the tank before it's going to show up on a non-sensitive crop. And that makes the biggest difference. We found out pretty quick, especially, I'm not going to name names, but a good friend of mine, he called me wanting to know how much did he need to rinse out after dicamba. He's spraying his own farm. He had his own sprayer. Sprayed dicamba. I said, triple rinse. You got to do it. Do it quick. And, you know, I can't tell people what to do. I can just give advice. And he's a good example. He said, you know, he's a smart guy, I think, but I'll rinse it once. It'll be fine. And I went to visit him a couple weeks later, and we walked some beans after where he had cleaned out one rinse. And he had caused injury on his own farm on non-dicamba beans. And he said, you know, you're right. I should have rinsed it a couple more times. And that sensitive crop will really tell on you if you're cut corners.
Yeah, it reminds me back when Roundup Ready soybeans first came out. We saw, and I'm sure you did too at North Carolina State, but our local land-grant university did a lot of, hey, what if we had just an ounce left in the tank? How much of a difference it made? And it was huge. Wesley Everman with North Carolina State, thank you so much. Appreciate having you on. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
When it comes to fungal diseases like soybean white mold and SDS, you know how devastating yield loss can be. That's why you work with your seed dealer to find the best genetics for your farm. Did you know you can bring forward the defensive traits of those genetics with a seed treatment? Heads up, a biological plant activator primes your seed to turn on its natural defense against disease. This spring, take your yields to the finish line. Ask your seed dealer for Heads Up Seed Treatment.
It's smart to make the right agronomic choices, and it's even smarter to get rewarded for them. With the Bayer Plus Rewards program, you earn cash back on seed, herbicides, and other eligible products. And it keeps getting smarter, because now you can earn an additional 10% bonus when you send your redemption check to your retailer. To learn more, contact your retailer today. Protect your yields and get the most from your land with Bayer Plus Rewards. Visit MyBayerPlus.com and see program terms and conditions for full details.
Maverick Corn Herbicide from Valent USA has proven to be a key part of growers' success in fighting problematic weeds. But don't take it from us. Take it from agronomy manager Nate Honeck.
We've seen tremendous weed control that was sprayed in dry, hot conditions with very little rain within 2 weeks after application. Very easy application. Definitely tank mix well with the various products we used.
Visit Valent.com/Maverick to learn more about Maverick Corn Herbicide. Always read and follow label instructions.
My mom's got a new Case IH tractor, and it can do it all. Bale hay all day. See in the dark with its powerful LED lights. Hook up all the implements. Shift like a race car, steer with ease. And it can also cool my juice box. Yeah, her Case IH tractor can do everything she needs it to.
Looking for a tractor that can do it all? Check out CaseIH.com.
Warning, high yields incoming. Upgrading your planter with Germinator closing wheels can increase your corn yields by 13 bushels in no-till and 7 bushels in conventional. Are your bins ready? Call Farm Shop MFG at 712-520-6051.
Tame tough weeds with a pre-plant application of Revitan, a powerful burn-down herbicide. Revitan drops the hammer on more than 50 species of tough weeds with great tank mix compatibility and low use rates. Learn more at helmcrop.com/Revitan. Always read and follow label directions.
Farming comes with trade-offs. An extra pass means dinner in the cab. An early morning becomes a late night. Unnecessary restrictions turn into headaches. But when you make Enlist herbicides the foundation of your herbicide program, the trade-offs will be in your favor. Effective weed control that's ready to work when you are. Flexible tank mix options and neighbor-friendly applications, all without the need to jump through hoops. See what you'll gain with America's most trusted herbicide system protecting your Enlist E3 soybean fields at Enlist.com.
Welcome back to Ag PhD Radio. Brian Hefty here, along with my brother Darren. We're live in the Morton studio. Today we've been talking a little about spray tank cleanout, and we're going to get back to your questions in the Ag PhD mailbag just shortly. So I guess I'll just put it this way. The reason why we're talking about spray tank cleanout today is because in the past, we've had issues on our own farm. We have some great people that work for us, thought we were doing some good things, still had issues. So a few key learnings from us, from our mistakes. Number one, a lot of people think about the spray tank. They forget about the spray boom. You have to make sure that that boom is cleaned out well in addition to the spray tank. It's happened to us, and it's caused some problems. Number two, the inside of your spray tank, it's the top. Okay, so I mean, we all think about where is the spray most of the time, the solution. It's on the bottom or on the sides. But don't forget, it splashes up onto the top, and some gets onto the top. And sometimes that can be a real problem because it's not wet all the time, and so it can dry and cake, and you have to look at the top of the inside of your spray tank too. Another issue that's happened to us. Number three, I would say the majority of farmers that I talk to have poly spray tanks. And even if you have a stainless steel tank, you don't have stainless steel booms, hoses, or I should say the connector, basically to go from the tank to all the way to the spray nozzle. It's not stainless steel. There's something in between there, some kind of hose, and you just don't have the ability to say, oh, I'll just flush it, and I know for sure everything is out of there. So here's where I'm going with this. Back when we had when we were using our poly spray tank all the time. We still have that sprayer around. I think we're finally going to get that sold now this year. But anyway, I would just tell the guys, look, I want you to use tank cleaner. And by the way, the tank cleaner can vary depending on the product you're using. So talk to your agronomist to read the label, because sometimes you need different types of tank cleaners. But anyway, I want you to clean it with tank cleaner, and then I want you to rinse it out a couple times. But we were having so many problems, I said, in addition to that, I want you to put a bunch of water in there with spray tank cleaner and let it sit overnight. And the guy's like, what? That's work. And I go, guys, we've been having all kinds of problems. This is going to end the problems, and it did. Interestingly, where we've seen issues in the past with many farmers we've worked with, we used to get this, I'd say, once or twice a year. And a farmer we'd be working with would say, I don't know what the heck happened, because this is like the third, fourth, fifth load that I did, and all of a sudden now it looks like there was stuff in my spray tank. But I've been running the same solution for several loads. How could that possibly be? And we'd say, well, what happened right before that load? Did it rain? Was it overnight? The point is, did the sprayer have to sit with solution overnight or longer, and what solution was it? For example, we learned that Roundup is a great tank cleaner. If you have Roundup mixed up in your spray tank and you let it sit for a few hours, and worse yet, a few days, it will suck whatever was in the pores of that poly tank out. So then all of a sudden you've got, and granted it wasn't hurting yield, okay, but it looked bad, and you'd have just a little bit of PPO damage or dicamba or something like that, and people were just mystified at, well, how could this possibly happen? I don't know. I put the right stuff in the tank. Yes, I know you did, and you did clean your tank out before, but this is, I'm going to go back to the reason why with the poly tanks, why I liked letting water sit with tank cleaner overnight to suck some of that stuff out. So if I ever ran into this situation, then I didn't have much of a problem. And granted, you could make sure you always emptied out. So in other words, if you go, it may rain here in 20 minutes, should I chance it and try to go spray a little more? Let's be honest, many of us have pushed it. What I'm telling you is probably don't do that if you have a poly tank. And then you're going to maybe let the stuff sit in that spray tank for 5 days before you get back out spraying again. That's probably not the best idea. So anyway, just some of those things that we learned over the years.
All right, let's continue talking about spray tank clean out here. We've got our friend Jim Reese, who works with Precision Labs. Jim, how are you doing?
I'm really well. How are you guys doing today?
Pretty good. Pretty good. I know we've talked about commercial tank cleaners, and we can certainly get into that a little bit, but I just wanted to start with this, Jim. If I've just sprayed something, if I get in there and immediately get after it, it's so much easier. If I wait, it just becomes a problem. And sometimes I don't care what you use for a product. It seems like if I wait, it's just really difficult to get stuff out completely. Talk me off the ledge here, Jim. If I had to run to a ball game and I didn't get my sprayer cleaned out, can I still get it clean 100%?
Oh gosh. Well, generally speaking, yes. But I mean, what are you doing after the ball game, right?
Well, celebrating the win, of course, Jim.
Well, as long as you're doing that and you're cleaning your sprayer at the same time, you might need the ball.
Well, here's how Brian responded. I'll have you respond to this one. Brian said, why don't you just fill the tank full of water, fill the boom full of water, and keep everything liquid? You could even throw your tank cleaner in at that time and then do all the work when you get back. Would that make more sense?
That would actually make a lot of sense. I think that's a really good plan, right? Let's start, you know, so time's always your advantage if you've got a spray system cleaner, a tank cleaner in there, right? So you at least want to fill up the sprayer like Brian suggested. Put your spray system cleaner in there, recirculate it a little bit, probably blow some out the booms too, and then go to the ball game. And literally you could come back tomorrow morning and probably finish the job. But that's a lot better option than just leaving it sit, right? Shutting off the sprayer and walking away and heading to the ball game.
So chemically speaking, when we look at a lot of the commercial tank cleaners, we're looking at, in general, high pH products. And I know people say, well, what about household ammonia? That's high pH, but it doesn't have the other ingredients in there that keep stuff in suspension. My experience has been stuff just sticks back to the side of the tank as it rinses out. What have you found, and what makes these commercial tank cleaners better and different?
You know, you're really a commercial tank cleaner started back in about 95, where they started to gain a lot of traction because American Cyanamid at the time published a white paper and said, hey, ammonia just doesn't cut it, right? It elevates pH, but it can't hold it there. So, for example, in our research, we found that we could move pH up to like pH 10 with household ammonia, but as soon as there was a tail of something left, like just a little bit of Roundup left in the system, it crashed it back down where it was really not having much effect at all. And to your point, there's no surfactants in household ammonia, and you're really relying on the surfactants and the anti-deposition aids to penetrate some of those residues and actually pull that stuff off and pull it into the solution. So, you know, just household ammonia may be cheap, but it's not very effective.
Now, the other one I hear a lot about is bleach, Jim, and I know there's some products like Lotus, for example, in HPPD that bleach seems to work pretty good, but there's a lot of times where that hasn't been a very good solution either. A lot of the home remedies are very, very hit and miss.
Yeah, bleach is an option. You know, years ago, though, they used to put bleach on labels, and they quit doing it because if you've got a little bit of nitrogen in the system, you could get a really nasty chlorine gas release off of that bleach. So it's pretty dangerous to do that. So if I run any nitrogen through my system, I would definitely rule using bleach out.
Yeah, and that's getting to be pretty standard in a lot of these treatments that they're adding in an ammonium sulfate or another nitrogen source. And I agree with you. That's a big part of the reason why bleach is just not even considered anymore. We're talking with Jim Reese here with Precision Labs. Jim, thank you so much. We appreciate having you on, and look forward to talking to you again as spray season continues.
Sounds good. Have a safe season, guys.
You bet. You as well. Talking about spray tank cleanout, it's the best way to make sure the next field you go to stays safe. You don't want any residue left from a previous crop or a previous field that you were in. We'll talk more about spray tank cleanout and take your calls and questions coming up right after this. Stay tuned.
Because the challenges you face are getting bigger every year, BASF is committed to helping with more than boots on the ground. We're committed to boots in the mud, boots on the steps of your truck, your tractor, your combine, the linoleum tiles of your coffee shop, the concrete of your co-op, the gravel in your shed. So we can listen, learn firsthand, help right now to ensure success. BASF, helping you do the biggest job on earth.
Back with multi-year proven results, torque drives performance. Unique to other biologicals, torque can be applied with other chemistries. Use in furrow or side dress to increase mycorrhizal associations, enhancing root development. Learn more about torque at thinkbiological.com or contact your local retailer and ask for torque today. Novozymes BioAg, think biological.
Right now at CNB, get 0% financing for 72 months on select John Deere compact utility tractors during our Go Green, Save Green event. Visit DeereEquipment.com. Offer ends April 30th, 24. Some restrictions apply. See dealer for details.
Get more durability for less downtime with Soil Warrior Strip Tillage from Environmental Tillage Systems. Improve fertilizer efficiency and reduce passes and fuel usage. Now that's ROI. Learn more about ETS at SoilWarrior.com.
Want a product that will give you nitrogen all season long? Then you want to try Envita. Envita gets directly into the cells of the plants, and it's easy to apply, foliar or in furrow. Envita provides the flexibility you need for your farm practices. Whether you want to reduce your nitrogen and maintain yield, or maintain your nitrogen and increase yield, Envita fits your farm. Envita SC formulation is OMRI registered. To learn more about Envita, visit azotic.com. That's AZOTIC.com.
Morton Buildings has served the American farmer for more than 120 years.
From manufacturing our own building components to constructing your building, Morton takes pride in being the industry leader in post-frame construction by providing a quality building and exceptional customer service. A Morton is built to last for generations. To get started on your next project, please visit MortonBuildings.com.
Nothing but net. Win your soybean season with the fast knockdown and lasting broad spectrum control of Elevest Insect Control from FMC. Take on armyworms, stink bugs, soybean loopers, and more with the maximized ratio of premier active ingredients for better overall control of more than 40 labeled pests. Visit your FMC retailer or elevest.ag.fmc.com to up your game this season. Always read and follow all label directions.
Listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio, taking your calls and questions at 844-44-AG-PHD. Or if you'd like to email us, you can sure send us a soil test or a picture or other information, radio@agphd.com. I want to dive into a soil test to look at, Brian. Okay, so I got this one in from Alex. And Alex said, I just took over this farm, and we're going to go corn on corn. So what should I address first from this soil test?
Okay, so everybody's soil lab, it seems like, is just a little bit different. So I'm not entirely sure exactly what testing method, and I'm not real sure about... I've seen a couple samples come from this lab, so I'm just going to... offer that up front, that I could be off a little bit, but here are some things that we know. This says estimated cation exchange capacity at 6. That means you've got real light soil. So the number one thing in ground like that I'm always going to be focused on is all my leachables. That's nitrate, sulfate, boron, and even potassium to some degree. I mean, when it's in Wisconsin, I'm thinking about it a lot differently than when it's in Alabama. And the reason why is because you get less rainfall and your ground is frozen at least for part of the year. So you don't have quite as much risk of loss as somebody in the southern United States with the same 6 CEC, but still there's some risk there. And I think that's fairly evident when you look at the parts per million here in potassium, 71. So not only does that mean that your base saturation K is low, it's a little over 2, but just flat out parts per million or pounds per acre, there aren't a lot there. Now phosphorus, even in that light of soil, phosphorus, copper, zinc, they're going to stick around pretty good. Looks like your zinc levels are fine. They're at like 16 and your phosphorus level is 48. So you run that ratio, that's 3 to 1 for a ratio. And what I'm saying is, please don't put more zinc out there, because it appears to me, assuming this lab tests it somewhat similar to most labs, it looks like you've got lots of zinc in relation to the phosphorus. So when you raise the phosphorus, not only will the phosphorus help your crop, but the phosphorus to zinc ratio is going to improve, and that's going to help things as well. So I guess those are probably the main things. But yeah, focus on nitrate, sulfate, boron constantly. Just kind of keep feeding those and get your phosphorus level up and get your potassium level up. And that, I mean, those are really the main things. So yeah, the first dollars that I'm spending are on P and K.
All right, thanks for the question. Get this one in from Marcel, who farms in Slovakia. And he said, hey guys, I got a question here about corn herbicides. Here's our situation. Our corn is up at V2. We've got many weeds, and the temperature during the day is only in the 50s or maybe 60 degrees Fahrenheit. And at night, it's down close to freezing. Which herbicide would be safe, and are any herbicides possible to spray in these types of conditions? Marcel, the first thing that strikes me about your question is, if you had a pre-emerge residual herbicide out there, you probably wouldn't have a whole lot of weeds out there at V2. So I'm guessing that you don't have a pre-emerge out there. That would be the first thing I would change going forward. If you still have some corn to seed and you've got access to a pre-emerge herbicide, like even just straight acetachlor, that would be fantastic.
We all, as farmers, have to look at what do we have as advantages and what do we have as disadvantages just naturally on our farm. So when I look at Slovakia, it's further north than Fargo, North Dakota. So I go, okay, it's going to be cold. The next thing is, I don't know where you're farming in Slovakia, but there are a lot of hills and mountains, and I don't know what your elevation is. But the more elevation you have, the more risk you have of some of those exceptionally cold temps as well. So when you know that the temperature is almost always going to be against you, then you have to think maybe a little bit differently. And to Darren's point, that's where I'm going to focus even more on the pre-emerge herbicides. So for corn, we really like the Group 15s. And you can look up the active ingredients of these products because the product names may not be in labeled in your country. But we like Harness, Surpass, Outlook, Dual, Zidua. Those are all those are the most popular Group 15s in the world, and we really like them for most weed control in corn. Great on grass, and they have some activity on a lot of the broadleaves. Okay, so if the corn's at V2, can you use an HPPD or a dicamba? Sure you can. I'm not worried that the product is going to hurt the corn that much at V2, even when the temps are cold. The concern we have is, how good's the weed control going to be? That's the problem. We've sprayed dicamba on our own farm with exactly the temperatures you're talking about, and it just hasn't worked very well. So you can go out there also. I mean, there are other products that can be used in corn. We used to use a combination of Buctrol and atrazine. It's not great on a lot of weeds, but it's good on some. But guess what Buctrol needs? Heat and sunlight. So, yeah, you're kind of stuck. Did he happen to say, do they have traits? Is it Roundup corn? Can they plant that in their
country? I don't
know
that answer. In the EU, I'm going to guess no.
Yeah, but Slovakia would not be in the European Union, I don't think. Is it?
I believe it is.
Oh, okay. Well, anyway, the point here is, even if you could spray Roundup over the top of that corn, it's not going to work great when your daytime highs are in the 50s and your nighttime lows are in the 30s. So what we do to try to overcome those things is either we wait and let the weather warm up, or we use higher rates. You can do that with Roundup, and there really isn't going to be much impact on that corn. You can probably do that with the HPPD, and there won't be much impact on the corn, but now you have more risk of carryover with the HPPD, so that's a concern. With dicamba, you're probably already using the full rate, and you can't go any higher. So, no, unfortunately, you're kind of stuck. You got to let that weather warm up just a little bit. And so, to go back in time, our advice would have been, use a pre-emerge herbicide, then you can spray closer to maybe V4 or V5 and try to hit a timing where the weather is warm enough so you get really good weed control.
And yes, Slovakia is in the EU, Brian, just for your reference.
Okay, all right. I did not think it was.
All right. Well, thanks for the question, Marcel. We appreciate that. All right. Got a tough weed control question here. This one comes in from Austin. He said, I have honeyvine milkweed and we need help. It's just awful. No one can get it under control in our area. And soybeans, corn, or wheat, we can burn it, but we can't kill it. Then it blooms so late that it breaks canopy. And, you know, it's interesting when we look at these perennial weeds. This one's got an extensive taproot system and lots of lateral roots too. Has a rapid growth rate, as you identified. But we've changed a few farming practices. One thing that we used to do more of is tillage. And tillage, a lot of times with the perennials, we say, oh, no, you're going to chop up the weeds and there'll be more of them. Tillage actually helps with honeyvine milkweed. And so this is one of the reasons that some in the industry think we're seeing more honeyvine milkweed is we've got cover crops out there, we've got no-till, and this is just one of the things that comes with it is some of these tougher perennial weeds. So we got to find a good way to get them under control. The problem that we've seen with Roundup and even with Liberty is using too low a rate. And a lot of the in-crop rates, when all you can use is a quart equivalent of Roundup, it's just not enough. It's enough for suppression, but not enough to take it out. Just read the label of Roundup and look at some of the perennial weeds. Oftentimes, they're talking 3 or even 4 quarts to be able to deliver a lethal dose to every one of those growing points. So the more established the honeyvine milkweed is in an area, the more Roundup it generally takes to get it under control. With pre-emerge herbicides, though, there are some opportunities here, and I have seen some of the work in vineyards where they're using flumioxazin, which would be the active ingredient in Valor, and they're using 2x to 4x rate compared to what we're using safely in soybeans. So you couldn't do this in soybeans. But they're seeing pretty good control, like up to 90% control of honeyvine milkweed for a couple of months. That's pretty exciting. And even with prowl, they're seeing prowl at the full rate, giving 60 to even 70% control in some of the trial work done at University of Kentucky. But when they put prowl and valor together, they were seeing the best control they had seen out of any pre-emerge herbicide. So it might be something to consider in your soybeans. Try using the three pre's, include prowl or and include valor in there, and see what kind of a difference you can make.
Yeah, but honestly, what I'm doing is I'm going to do a burn down of straight Roundup, highest possible labeled rate, keep the water volume low. That generally will take it out.
All right, thanks for the question, Austin. Really appreciate that. We'll be right back with more of your calls and questions after this.
Are you ready for better efficiency, more productivity, higher yields? Then you're ready for John Deere Precision Technology, which starts with three core pieces. First, a G5 display gives fast views of your work and a window to future technology. A Starfire receiver gives you sub-inch repeatable accuracy without an RTK base station. And a JD Link modem gives you a live view of your entire operation. Get precise and talk with your John Deere dealer or visit johndeere.com/Facebook.
Get uniform control in your fields with trusted, hard-working Lucento fungicide. Control the toughest diseases with a dual mode of action fungicide that consistently outperforms the competition and field trials. Lucento fungicide from FMC works overtime for lasting control to help improve crop yields. Talk about getting the job done. Visit your FMC retailer or lucento.ag.fmc.com for hardworking control in your fields. Always read and follow all label directions.
Here at Ag PhD, we're always looking for ways to support the next generation in the ag industry. That's why at our free Ag PhD Scouting and Scholarships event on Saturday, June 29th, we're giving away more than 100 college scholarships. Join us as we head into the field for hands-on sessions covering everything from how to pull soil and tissue samples, ways to improve crop health, the importance of microbiology in farming, and much more. Plus, in our comprehensive guide to crop scouting, we'll explore both above and below ground in a variety of crops as we diagnose problems with insects, weeds, diseases, and anything else we may find. As we're giving away tens of thousands of dollars in scholarships to eligible attendees, this day is geared more towards students and young farmers, but anyone with a desire to learn more about agronomy is more than welcome. So whether you're a college student or just want good agronomy information, this is one event you won't want to miss. Come to the Ag PhD Scouting and Scholarships Day, Saturday, June 29th on the Hefty Farm near Baltic, South Dakota. Learn more and register at agphd.com.
If you look close enough, you can see the hidden potential within your fields. That's why an agro-liquid nutrition plan starts with the crop and identifies the precise combination of primary nutrients while focusing on the support of secondary and micronutrients. So every nutrient is working in harmony for your crop to reach its full potential. Maximizing growth while offering lower use rates. Apply less, expect more? Precisely. Find an agroliquid dealer at agroliquid.com.
Palmer Amaranth. 4 counts of yield theft, resistance to groups 2, 4, 9.
You ain't got nothing on me, man.
We've been surveilling you. And now we've got Tough 5EC, a tank mix partner that'll make sure you and your gang of resistant weeds never see the daylight again.
Crack down on repeat offenders. Add Tough 5EC to your post-emergence tank mix. Learn more at toughonweeds.com. Always read and follow label directions. Tough is a registered trademark of Belsham Crop Protection.
You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. If you'd like to send us an agronomic question, you can email us, radio@agphd.com, or just give us a phone call, 844-44-AG-PHD. I got this one from John, who said, guys, why are all fertilizers salt-based?
Anytime you have an anion and a cation together, that is what a salt is. So I'd just say fertilizer then, by definition, is a salt, because fertilizer is going to contain an anion and a cation in the forms that we deliver. So I guess, is there some different way to do it in the future? Probably. I don't know enough about the chemistry, and I don't deal with it on that side. I just know that all the fertilizer we apply today is a salt. And certainly there are some that are low salt, high salt. I mean, there's obviously a big range.
Thanks for the question. This one comes from Adam. He said, my concern is how to kill cover crops in an organic production field besides using tillage. Chemicals aren't an option for me. And then how do I minimize moisture absorption from cover crops? We're pretty dry in our area. I think kind of both of those, Brian. We just do things a little different. We use a cover crop that's going to die with winter. Now, I'm not sure exactly where you're at, Adam. Maybe
that's
you're in a
you
place
do
that doesn't freeze. Yep. But, for example, we'll put oats out there after we take our silage corn off. We get another month and a half, 2 months of growth out of the oats. It's fantastic, protects the soil. We love it. But then winter comes along and 100% kills the oats. We don't have to do any tillage. In fact, the oats typically is broke down enough that it's real easy to plant through in the spring.
Because, if you say, hey, I have a cover crop that's growing in the spring, I don't want to use herbicides and I don't want to use tillage, how do I kill it? I have no idea. Not a clue. Hey, we had a question come in from Clayton. He said, hey, guys, I want to melt down urea, so that's 4600, and spray foliar throughout the growing season on corn. I would like to put on 10 gallons to the acre. That was my goal, but how can I do that safely?
21% nitrogen is what it ends up being.
What are you talking about?
When you melt down urea into a liquid, so it ends up being 21% nitrogen.
Okay. Well, anyway, where I'm going with this is any time you're going to put fertilizer broadcast over the top of a crop, you typically want to put 1 gallon of water for 1 gallon of fertilizer. And to be extra super crazy safe, you can go 2-to-1 if you would like. But yeah, so if you put 10 gallons of this on, I'd put at least 10 gallons of water on. And if you go, it's still getting me a little bit, just keep upping the water. But 10 and 10 should probably do it.
All right. Kyle writes in. He says, what do you guys think of teff hay or Sudan grass?
I guess we've never used either, quite frankly. Well, we probably did use Sudan grass years and years and years ago.
Yep. I would say here's my thought is weed control is tough. There's not very many options of things that you can spray around those crops. So you've got to do a good job getting them in timely. Seeding them so you're going to achieve a crop canopy as soon as you possibly can. But otherwise, they're very useful crops if you can just get them growing. So if you don't, let's just say the worst case scenario, you've got a water hemp disaster and you're not starting with a clean field and you no-till into that. So you've already got weeds that have a jump start on your crop. It's going to be tough to get high quality feed. But if you start clean and you've got a field that doesn't have a tremendous weed history and you get stuff in early, you get these crops up quickly and get them established, fertilize them well and so forth, you're going to do well and you'll have some pretty nice feed.
Yeah, a lot of people talk about sorghum Sudan grass as being able to choke out just about anything for weeds. So I guess that is one of the advantages that, if I raise a tremendous crop and I got it seeded heavy and it's grown big, then hopefully I'm in pretty good shape. But yeah, I mean, there are always lots of crops that people ask about. You just have to look at the same things with your crop that there is with anything else. So I don't care if it's these or corn or soybeans. Drainage, fertility, and then obviously weed, insect, disease control, and scouting on a regular basis. And then there are a lot of things where it's just, quite frankly, trial and error where, you know, everything from, hey, when should I seed this, to do I like tillage on my farm or do I not, and lots of other things.
All right, got some soil samples in here from Belize. And this comes in from Rodney. He said, hey, guys, love your show.
He had these tested in the United States, though.
A high clay soil here. It cracks a lot in dry weather, and the cracks get to be 2 inches wide, can literally rip roots apart. Would you mind taking a look at these soil samples and see if there's something that can help me fix this? Now, a couple things I noticed, Brian. We've got some soluble salt levels building up in a few of those tests.
We do.
We've got some sodium base saturations building up. They're not terrible yet, but it's starting to get to that point. So I wonder about that. And then just looking at your pictures, I can see some white on the surface on a couple of these. To me, that looks like it could potentially be some salt issues building up. So that's one thing I'd be a little concerned about.
Okay, but here's the thing. It looks like these are all labeled as different fields, and we have one test per field. Darren and I were just talking about this morning.
I don't know how big the fields are.
Yep, we don't. But even if they're 10 acres, I'd like to see more, because where that spot is white, that sure looks like an alkaline issue there, probably or possibly high sodium. And I'll say this too. When you look at the cation exchange capacity, it's off the charts on some of this. Why is it so ridiculously high?
Yeah, I don't know if I buy the 10,000 parts per million calcium readings there. I think we need a calcium displacement test.
Yeah, because it doesn't say there's excess lime. But anyway, where I'm going with this is we'd probably like to see some more tests, because you've got lots of variance here. So, for example, there's one that's, you've got 2,387 parts per million of sulfur there. That also is where your soluble salts are high. What is that telling us? That means you have a poor drainage spot. So it might be a spot, I don't know without looking at it, but it's bad, and that's got to get fixed. In that same spot, that's where your pH is really low at 4.7. So, I mean, I'm going to be addressing the low pH with some lime, but the first thing that needs to happen is we've got to fix the drainage. You got to get some tile out there in that super heavy ground. But anyway, it's kind of interesting. So that's the spot where literally it says 99 cation exchange capacity, yet the organic matter is only 2.8%. Calcium, to Darren's point, 10,000, but this does not say we have excess lime. So yes, we would probably want to have a cation displacement test run. Neil Kinsey does that kind of work, and he works with a lot of people in foreign countries as well. So he might be able to help you there so we could get more on the right path. Otherwise, I'm looking at potassium that in relation to all the magnesium and the calcium you've got in your soils, it's really low. So I just say, hey, when we're dealing with 100, maybe 200 parts per million of potassium, and you've got high calcium and magnesium, you got to get that potassium up. Now, we've had similar soils on our farm. Until we get the calcium thing fixed and the drainage thing fixed, we're doing a lot of banding of potassium. So we'll plant row crops, corn and soybeans. We'll band the potassium, usually with strip till, and that's worked out pretty well. So we can get those nutrients into the plant fairly quickly until we get everything else taken care of. But yeah, you're looking at 10,000 parts per million on calcium on a bunch of these. So cation displacement test, to Darren's point, probably a good idea.
All right. Had this one come in from Sean. What are your thoughts on wood ash?
Oh, Darren just sprung this one on me in the end.
Sean,
here, so.
Here's the first thing. Anytime we get asked questions on that, where's it coming from? And we would love to see a sample so we know what the nutrient content is and those types of things. And just knowing where it's coming from also sometimes would give us a heads up on there could potentially be a problem that we might be thinking about with a certain source or something like that. But just off the top of my head, wood is really high in carbon.
Yep.
And when we add that to our fields, a lot of times that can tie up nitrogen for either a short time or a long time. So depending on how much of this we would be adding, that may greatly influence what we put out for nitrogen.
Yeah, the reason why I was kind of giving Darren a hard time there, and he sprung this one on me with just over a minute to go in the show, we don't have time to fully talk that all through, so we can maybe discuss that again in a couple of days or something. But yeah, we'd really like to see a test on, okay, what does this stuff look like? What are we getting there? We probably need a few more details and lots more to talk about.
Thanks for the question, Sean. And thanks to you for listening today. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio.